The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from money.com and also kiplinger.com. Our first article is entitled, How to Save Money. Across all personal finance websites, magazines, and books, whether you listen to a bigwig guru or consult with a financial advisor, the most common advice you're bound to hear is, save your money. It's not because anyone thinks you should sit on a pile of cash and never touch it, but it's because it is impossible to achieve any milestones without saving money ahead of time. It's never the wrong time to begin working toward your savings goals, but knowing how and where to start can be the most challenging part. Start by budgeting. The first step is understanding where your money is currently going and finding areas where you can trim the fat by making a budget and sticking to it. Some people prefer going old school by actually opening up their bank statements and manually writing out each purchase or tracking them on a spreadsheet, and then comparing the totals to their monthly after-tax income. Another option is to get high-tech by using an automated financial tracking service like Mint or You Need a Budget, where you can then link your checking accounts and credit cards to your budget so that every purchase you make is automatically counted. Budgeting is a great first step towards saving more money, but what's your ultimate plan for the money you've saved? And how can you motivate yourself to be diligent and save more? Many savers find that it's very important to set clear financial goals and save for specific expenses down the road. A down payment on a home, a college fund for your kids, a vacation to Hawaii, a season's worth of holiday gifts for the family, and so on. You have to ask yourself what you're saving for, and when is this money going to be drawn on, says John Pilkington, CFP and Senior Financial Advisor with Vanguard Personal Advisor Services. Build an emergency fund. If you're brand new to saving money, your first move should be to build an emergency savings fund. Ideally, an emergency fund should cover 3 to 6 months' worth of non-discretionary spending, meaning a combination of your fixed payments like rent or mortgage, plus the average monthly cost of bills, groceries, transportation, and other unforeseen but inevitable expenses. Basically, the total cost of all of your needs and none of your wants. As for where to put the money, a high-yield savings account is your best option because the interest they accrue is typically higher than a normal bank account. An online savings account is also easily accessible, but not so easy that it will be tempting to pull from and spend on non-necessities. Your goal should be to put about 10% of each paycheck into your emergency fund until it's fully funded. But any amount higher than zero is good. An easy way to start getting in the habit of savings is to automatically send a manageable percentage of your income to a high-yield savings account and then set targeted goals of increasing the savings amount every few months. For example, you could reroute 3% of your monthly income into a savings account, then increase it to 6% in 3 months, and then up to 10% 3 months after that. Of course, depending on your income and your budget, you might be able to consistently save more than 10% and build up your emergency fund more quickly. Save for retirement. Do you work full-time? If so, it's likely you have access to an employer-sponsored retirement plan, usually a 401k funded with pre-tax dollars or a Roth 401k funded with post-tax dollars. If you're not currently contributing, you could basically be giving away free money. That's because in many instances, employers will offer a 401k match-up to a certain percentage. The average was around 4.7% as of last year, meaning that if you deposit at least 4.7% of your paycheck into your 401k, your employer will also deposit an amount equivalent to 4.7% of your pay as well. Maxing out your employer's match is an easy way to multiply your money and save for retirement. Two-thirds of Americans with available 401k matches don't take full advantage of that match, says Pilkington. For those who don't receive a 401k through their employer, or who work as an independent contractor or are self-employed, the best option is an individual retirement account, otherwise known as an IRA. Within this category, there are two options. One, a traditional IRA, in which the money remains untaxed until you begin pulling it out, no later than age 72. And two, a Roth IRA, which is taxed now as opposed to later, making it the better choice for people who expect to make more money as they get older. This is because you'll be in a higher income tax bracket as your earnings rise, and it's cheaper to settle your obligations with Uncle Sam when your tax rate is low. Pilkington notes that the Roth IRA is more flexible than a regular retirement fund as well. It's an excellent vehicle to save for retirement while also having the liquidity to draw from for a big purchase like buying a home. This is because you can withdraw your contributions at any time without penalty, since you've already paid taxes on that money. To withdraw any earnings from those contributions made in the stock market, in most cases, you'll have to wait until age 59 and a half. While it can be frustrating that you can't touch this money for decades, it's incredibly important to make this investment in your future self and the lifestyle you want to have as you age. Begin investing. If you are able to pay your bills and you've already built up an emergency fund and are maxing out your employer's retirement match, you may be lucky enough to have some money left over at the end of the month. This is when investing can help boost your saving strategies. There are many different ways to invest. In fact, if you're making contributions to a retirement plan, then you're probably already participating in an investment fund of some sort. While investing is most commonly associated with purchasing and trading individual stocks, most beginners find it easier and much, much safer to get started with mutual funds or exchange-traded funds or ETFs. Your 401k or IRA, if you have one, will have a menu of different investments that probably includes a target date fund, which is a mutual fund whose manager adjusts the mix of stocks and bonds as you approach your target retirement year. You can buy a mutual fund, especially a bundle of stocks overseen by a fund manager at a brokerage firm like Schwab or Fidelity, or directly from the fund company itself. Most financial planners recommend index funds, which aim to replicate the performance of the stock market as a whole, rather than active funds, which employ a portfolio manager attempting to pick winning stocks. If you do not want some hand-holding, so-called robo-advisors use computer algorithms to help match you with a portfolio of index funds based on factors like your age and risk tolerance. If you have ambitious goals with your investments, but need to be smart about the risk, a robo-advisor can make practical recommendations. One thing to remember, while investing is the best way to boost your savings and increase your wealth in the long run, you can lose money and must be willing to tolerate down periods in the stock market. Be sure you have a savings horizon of at least 3 years and preferably longer before you start investing. Easy ways to save money. There are all sorts of tips and tricks that experts swear by to help people save more. No single strategy works for everyone, and sometimes an approach may even backfire. Ultimately, it depends on what works best for you. Here are some popular ways to save, backed by financial advisors and consumer psychology. Automate your savings. Want to save money without even thinking about it? Then remove yourself from the equation so that you don't even see your latest savings allotment on payday. Many employers allow employees to split up where their paychecks are divided. For example, you could fill out paperwork with your company to direct 90% of your paycheck to your savings, to your checking account, and 10% to your savings accounts, perhaps even one that you keep at a different bank. Alternatively, if your paycheck can only be deposited in one spot, you can set up automatic transfers online from your checking account to a linked savings account on payday, even if they're on different banking platforms. Automating helps you behaviorally condition yourself to not think of that as spendable, consumable income, says Pilkington. Pay down debt. Some people will tell you paying off debt should be your primary goal before you start focusing on saving money. While it's true that high interest debts like credit cards or payday loans require more immediate attention, especially if you're behind on payments, it's not urgent to pay off all debt as soon as possible. Some debts like federal student loans and mortgages are considered good debt. They have low interest rates, don't hurt your credit score, offer tax benefits, and ultimately help you build wealth. If you aggressively pay down good debt to the point that you have little or no savings, you run the risk of major turmoil if you run into a financial emergency. Your focus should be on paying off high interest debts monthly and in full. Paying down higher interest rate debt gives people a guaranteed return, says Pilkington. Break your savings goals into bite-sized pieces. Saving $1,800 in 1 year for an emergency fund when you're starting from zero is a daunting task, to say the least. Breaking it down to saving $150 each month can help you breathe a bit more easily. But that still may seem like a decent chunk of change. However, when you break it down even further, you find that that $1,800 in 1 year is just $5 a day, which probably seems much more doable. Researchers from the University of California, Los Angeles, and the University of London found that it's easier for people to save money when they break it down into daily contributions. You can contribute a daily amount of $5 or include it as a daily $5 transaction fee in your budget so that the savings isn't available for you to use on anything else. This approach doesn't change the amount you're ultimately saving, but it can help you stay on track for long-term goals. Reduce your monthly bills. In the age of the Internet, subscription fees are unavoidable. Streaming services, news sites, meal kit delivery plans, takeout apps, grocery delivery programs, the list goes on and on. And all of these fees on top of your regular monthly bills, and the total can quickly eat up a huge part of your paycheck. Take a hard look at where your monthly payments are going, which should be easy since you've been tracking them in a budget. And are there any subscriptions you just don't use enough to be worthwhile? If you never watch anything on Hulu or end up throwing away half of those pre-made dinners, it's time to cancel your subscriptions and free up some more money to save. Another way to reclaim some cash is to contact all of your monthly service providers and ask for a better deal. Your internet, cable, and phone bills are entirely negotiable, and you might not even have to change your cell phone plan or lose access to the premium cable channels to catch a price reduction. Simply call the customer service line of your provider, request to be put on a call with the retention and cancellation department, and ask for a lower price in a firm but friendly way. Earn cash back when you shop. Did you know you can make money while shopping online or at grocery stores? There are two ways to do it. The first is using an online shopping portal like Rakuten. Whenever you need to make a purchase, you can either go directly to the Rakuten website, search for items you're looking for, and then click through to the sites offering the best rewards for users, or you can download the Rakuten browser extension. That, again, is Rakuten, which notifies you of the cashback offers available when visiting different websites. As you earn rewards, you can cash them out as quarterly checks. The catch with sites like these is that you have to do your due diligence, focusing exclusively on getting cash back, which can mean you miss a less expensive option that doesn't give you cash back. It's also important to only use cash back sites for needs and not wants. If you're not cautious, it's easy to wind up buying random things you don't need. The other option is using a cash back credit card. Credit cards sometimes get a bad reputation in the personal finance industry because they can quickly saddle consumers with debt if they're not careful. But if you always back your balance in full each month, and you should, then it's wise to take advantage of generous credit card reward programs. Take the Blue Cash Preferred Card from American Express, which allows users to earn 6% cash back on $6,000 worth of grocery store purchases each year. Buy high quality items. Have you ever heard of the Boots theory of socioeconomic unfairness? In Terry Pratchett's 1993 novel, Men at Arms, the character Sam Vimes explains that one reason rich people are wealthy is because they spend less money over the long haul. He says that a rich man can spend $50 on boots that will last for years, meaning he never has to buy another pair. On the other hand, a poor man who buys a more affordable pair of $10 boots will only be able to wear them for a season or two before they fall apart. While the rich man initially makes a more expensive purchase, the poor man will buy more pairs of boots in his lifetime, eventually spending more than the rich man ever does. It can be difficult to bite the bullet and pay more than you're used to for higher quality items, but there's a good reason to believe the long-term utility of many purchases outweigh the initial cost. But let's get something straight. This doesn't mean you should shell out thousands on flashy brand name items. There's a difference between luxury and quality, and high cost doesn't automatically equal durability. The Boots theory works best in practice when it's applied to necessities and items that will be used for a long period of time with no need for replacements. Some examples of smart boots theory-based purchases are stainless steel pots and pans for home chefs, a family computer with a large amount of memory and storage space, children's clothing that can be passed down, and, of course, work boots for people whose job involves high levels of physical labor. Try a spending freeze. It's one of the easiest tips on this list because most people do it all the time without realizing it, and they go a whole day without spending money. The parameters of a spending freeze are up to each individual, and there's no need to make it just one day. Some people like to dedicate a week or two where they only spend a limited dollar amount, strictly on necessities, while others try to go a day or even a whole weekend without spending a single dollar. As you get into the habit of not spending any money at least one day a week, you might find there's more and more money left over in your budget at the end of each month. Our next article from Kiplinger.com. Should you leave your heat on all day or turn it off? Which is cheaper? With energy prices increasing, heating your home is proving difficult for many to afford. This peak in prices is leading many to search for alternative ways to save on energy bills during the winter. However, the solution can be easier than you think. If you've ever wondered whether or not you should leave your heat on low all day or turn it off when you're gone, keep reading. The idea that your heater has to work smarter to heat a cold house and harder to heat a coal house than it does to keep a home warm is a common misconception. Your home will heat at the same rate regardless of how cold it is inside. Considering the typical household spends $4,400 a year on utility bills, it doesn't make sense to expend energy if you're not home. If you plan on being away from home for an extended period, turn off your heater so you're not paying for heat all day. If turning the heat off all day isn't an option, then the next best thing is to keep your thermostat setting low to cut your bills. When you are home, it's recommended to turn your thermostat down to 68 degrees for 8 hours a day. You'll be able to maximize your savings by making sure your home is properly insulated so it loses less heat. Purchasing a smart thermostat is also a great solution to keeping your home at the appropriate temperature. With a smart thermostat, you'll be able to control your home's temperature from your phone, allowing you to schedule different temperatures for different times of the day or to shut your heat off or on whenever you want. Other ways to save on energy cost. Make sure your home is well insulated so it loses less heat. If you don't already have it, insulation is a good investment and it reduces your future bills. Switch to LED light bulbs. They use 75% less energy than incandescent halogen light bulbs. Consider whether solar panels could be an option for your property. Place your thermostat where it will give you the most accurate temperature and avoid drafty windows or direct sunlight. Wash your clothes in cold water. This can cut your energy usage in half when doing laundry. And bundle up. Wear warm clothes and use blankets to avoid turning up the heat. So the bottom line, overall, turning your heater off during the day when you're not home is the best way to save on heating cost. If you're out of work all day, flip off your heat until you get home. If you work from home and are unable to shut your heat off completely, then try keeping your thermostat at a low temperature during the day. And purchasing a smart thermostat gives you the option of controlling the heat in your home from your phone, helping you to save money on utility bills during cold spells. Our next article from Money.com. Used car prices are down for the fourth straight month, but cost may soon rise again. The average price of a used car dropped by $633 in the past month, but some industry experts say the recent stretch of declining prices could be coming to an end. List prices for used vehicles averaged $26,510 at the end of January after falling for four consecutive months, according to Kelley Blue Book and parent company Cox Automotive. In September, the average list price was $28,266. Used car prices soared throughout 2021, They then continued to rise for most of the early part of 2022 before they began their fall. A year ago, the average price for a used vehicle was $27,606, which is about $1,100 more expensive than the current average. According to the latest report on consumer inflation, used vehicle prices were down 1.9% in the past month and down 11.6% over the past year. What experts say? Jonathan Smoke, chief economist at Cox, says the retail price trend will reverse soon because wholesale prices for used cars have risen so far in 2023. Used vehicle inventory declined in January, and the availability of lower-priced used cars is relatively low, according to Kelley Blue Book. At the current selling pace, the day's supply for vehicles under $10,000 was 35 days at the end of January. For vehicles between $15,000 and $20,000, the day's supply was 46, and there was a 53-day supply of vehicles over $35,000. Overall, the inventory of used vehicles was 2.21 million at the end of January, which is 14% lower than the level a year ago of 2.56 million. Wholesale used vehicle values, which are based on the prices dealers pay at auctions, increased by 2.5% in January. That could be an indication that retail prices will soon rise. And the bottom line, used car buyers are benefiting from lower prices. While there are some indications that the used market could get more competitive, high auto loan interest rates will likely continue to stifle demand. And as we wrap up our program for today, just a few minutes left, a couple of interesting facts from Centennial Money Magazine. Did you know that there are 424, that's the number of American billionaires in 2012, according to Forbes magazine, and 39% of Americans have enough cash on hand to cover only a $1,000 emergency. The percentage of Americans living paycheck to paycheck, 59%. And 70% is the percentage of Americans who plan to continue working past retirement age. $3,500 is the annual expenditure on dining out by the average American household. And the total student debt owed by Americans, $1.5 trillion. Well, we're out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Thank you for joining us, and please be sure to listen to us again next time. On behalf of the North Carolina Reading Service, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions, please call us, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.